Broadcasting and streaming worldwide from the Golf Club Studios, it's the Golf Club Radio Show with Danielle Tucker.
Hi, Danielle. It's Ben Crenshaw.
Oh, Ben, we got ourselves a doozy of a weekend. Boy, oh, boy. Let's go with a flood advisory, or actually, it's a flood watch. From Saturday afternoon, so a little bit later today, through Monday afternoon, for Niihau, Kauai, Oahu, Molokai, Lanai, Kahoolawe, and Maui. Yeah, that's a flood watch. And then there's the high surf warning for Niihau, Kauai, Oahu, Molokai, and Maui. And the high wind watch. Again, Kauai, Oahu, Molokai, Lanai, Kahoolawe, and Maui. Yeah, so it's going to be kind of breezy, windward and mauka, haze through the day, they say today. Numerous showers in the morning, showers and slight chance of thunderstorms this afternoon. You know, I've always wondered when those will actually happen, and I hope it's not today because we've got enough going on. There's haze through the day as well as everything else, those scattered showers, thunderstorms possibly, numerous showers, slight chance of thunderstorms in the afternoon. They're everywhere. Locally heavy rainfall possible in the afternoon, high between 73 and 78. Northeasterlies, 15 to 25, bring a jacket. And the gusts up to 45, hit the ball. Nice. Yeah, okay, so where are we going to hit the ball? How about you go to Makalei? There's an 850 and a 948 and an 1110. And the Lost Boys, they're on the golf course. Maybe you'll find them. The Weathermen, they're at Poipu on Kauai. There's an 850, a 1030, and a 1210 if you'd like to catch that. Kauai Lagoons, they got a 9 o'clock, an 1108. Oh, yeah, both of those, Kauai Lagoons. Getting to Oahu, Hawaii Kai has a 914, 1038, 1116. Turtle Bay, 850, 952, 1130. The Beach Babes, they're on the golf course, or are the beach? Well, they're probably playing a little bit first. Raw Hawaiian Country Club has an 836 and a 952 and an 1108. And we've got the San Francisco Lady Accountants in town. Welcome. So glad you're here. I hope it doesn't pour on you all day. Eva Beach, 832, the Eva Golf Course. 832, 1040, and an 1150 for you there. Bayview on the windward side, 838, 1008, and 1156. And the Swamp Rats. You know, it's going to probably feel like a swamp if all of those forecast figures come true. By the way, that runs through Sunday, all day today, cloudy Monday, very windy. We're just in for it, a little winter weather. We've also got Wailea Gold Course where you can play on Maui, 8:30, 9:10. The Emerald Course, 1:20 this afternoon. That is the only tee time. Grab it. There's on the Blue Course an 8:30 and a 9:20 and an 11:10. And at Maui Nui, we have an 8:40 and an 11:20 and a 12 o'clock. And those are your tee times. And now we've got a huge show for you. Yes. We've got Ben Hongo, President, Aloha Section PGA. He is one of the top teachers in the state of Hawaii. We've got Mike Johnson, Golf Digest Equipment Editor, joining us. He's also one of the judges for Golf Digest's Hot List team. And we've got Adam Shupak, Senior Writer, Golf Week on the show. And kicking it all off, Sam Weinman, Golf Digest Digital Editorial Director, author, Win It Losing. How our biggest setbacks can lead to our great gains, our greatest gains. After this, my name is Danielle Tucker. This is The Golf Club.
Danielle Tucker's The Golf Club, brought to you by Pacific Repair Services, located at 540 Lagoon Drive across from JN Motors. PRS does appliance repairs, maintenance, and sales. The Newtown Driving Range, warm up before your round or wind down after work. The Newtown Range, operated by the Casey Nakama Golf Group. Good golf, good food, and good fun. The Aloha Section PGA. Teach your kids to play golf. The game that lasts forever. Aloha Power Equipment. We put power at your fingertips in Evilay next to Costco Gas and in Waipahu. And teaching pro Claude Brousseau at the Wailea Golf Academy, Maui. Now, Here's Danielle Tucker.
And thank you so much, Sam Weinman, Golf Digest Digital Editorial Director. He is the author of Win at Losing: How Our Biggest Setbacks Can Lead to Our Greatest Gains. Welcome into the clubhouse.
Danielle, thanks for having me. I'm glad to be here.
I love the title of your book. I mean, tell me from whence this sprung.
Well, you know, the genesis of that book, it's a few years now, was essentially two-pronged. One was as a sports writer who just had always been intrigued and fascinated by losing locker rooms, for lack of a better phrase. Like, I just felt when I would write about various games, not just golf, but all sorts of games, I always found that, you know, winning teams were interesting and had worthwhile stories, but the more compelling soul-searching was always in the losing locker room. People had more, you know, insightful things to say. There was more introspection. I certainly associated with myself. And then the other part of this was, this was a point when my boys now one's 20 and one's 18, but my boys were younger and they were, you know, competitive little athletes. And I found that I was constantly kind of, you know, trying to impress upon them the importance of learning how to lose and, you know, losing well. And you know, the one misconception that people had was that I was in favor of losing. I was not. Like, I'm a very competitive person. They're very competitive people. What I was saying is, in order to be a competitive person and to go after what you want, you have to sort of understand ways that losing can contribute to that process.
And right on.
That's kind of one of my founding principles for, you know, for a while now.
Yeah, that's great. Because a lot of times folks go kind of like in that drain, you know, that one that goes down, 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 down. And you've got to step up, look what you can take from what happened, and just move along. Otherwise, you're in this constant state of funk, which is not good for
you. And especially, yeah, I was going to say, especially in golf, which is, you know, there's so much failure and disappointment in golf. And it's very rare that you leave the golf course feeling great about everything. You just don't. And so, you know, but the reason you come back is you have this sort of innate feeling like, okay, I kind of saw what I did wrong. I feel like I can work on that. And it can be galvanizing. And that's kind of one of the things that I really try to impress, you know, in golf, but also personally and, you know, certainly within my family.
Nice. So when did you write this?
It's not 10 years, believe it or not. I'm working on another book, actually.
Yes.
There's definitely some you know, similar elements to this book as well, but it's much more golf-focused. My first book, Win at Losing, was there was a golf element to it, but it kind of ran the gamut from golf to other sports to business to entertainment. So there was a lot of other elements as well.
And the name of the new one, can you tell us?
I'm holding out for a little bit longer. I'm close to saying, I'm pretty sure I know what the title is, but it's a work in progress. So
right on.
It'll be a golf book. It's if people sort of might note kind of what I tend to focus on at Golf Digest. I write a lot about mental game and kind of how people like myself, I'm a very average golfer, kind of like how we derive enjoyment and find progress even in moments when we're not necessarily feeling great about our games. So there's a lot of kind of consistent threads between my first book and how it specifically applies to golf and how we can kind of enjoy golf even when it's not always going as well as we would like.
Right on. And, you know, when you're in a group and you're coming back and you're heading, you're finished, somebody's hasn't had a good day at all. Some have had an okay mm-hmm. day. Some have had a great day. Pretty soon all of that energy sort of coalesces and you've got everybody kind of lifting each other up or, you know, out of the, and then there's this camaraderie that you've done it. You survived mm-hmm. another 18 together and you're laughing and you're having fun. So it's a wonderful game. At the same time, you can't take it too seriously. And that's a
correct.
How do you do that? People want to know.
Well, for me, it's like, I walk that tightrope every time I play golf. I am very invested in wanting to get better and caring about my golf. And yet also I think I probably care most out of my group, my foursome, I care the most about my golf, and yet I'm also the person who is most likely to be philosophical about a bad day.
Yeah.
Because I feel like it's part of the process. Like, I really feel like part of golf is caring, trying your best, and then when things don't go well, still recognizing it was worthwhile. Because, I mean, again, all the cliches, which happen to be true. You know, you learn a lot about yourself. You figured out things that you can be better at. You know, you work through a challenge. I really feel like that's part of what makes golf great. And so, you know, like, I have bad days where I'm really depressed on the golf course. I just feel like what I'm pretty good at is, even, you know, an hour later, I'm able to say, okay, actually, I can see some good things I did, or things that I can, like, look forward to about tomorrow based on what happened today.
Yeah, yeah. I would like to have the a book, something to the tune of Quit the Stinking Thinking and
mm-hmm. yeah.
find a way to, you know, just enjoy being outdoors, enjoying the company that you're in. And yes, you didn't hit that very well, but you will the next time, maybe. You know, just...
Yeah.
Like
I said, it's tricky because I'm also, you know, I don't want to tell people they should be happy all the time and just enjoy. I want to give people the space to be, you know, upset or disappointed, because that just might be where they are. And occasionally that's where I am too. I definitely think, like, if you're miserable for 4 hours and you're miserable when you walk away from the golf course, well, then I think, you know, that's when you have to exercise what's known as expectation management, you know, which is like, you know, what do you expect? Like, if you're expecting the game to be always fun and, you know, always, you know, yourself to always be successful, and you're not having that experience, you probably need to kind of adjust your expectations. But I also want people to, you know, allow them to have like a bad day or be in a funk, because it just might be where they are. And, you know, like, just speaking as relates to my kids, like, when you tell someone just be happy, don't be miserable, that doesn't go well. You know, you have to kind of let people be where they are.
Mm.
And usually that's what when you give them that space, they usually kind of work their way out of it eventually on their own.
Yeah. Yeah, that's why there's sometimes three people walking a little bit quicker and there's one person behind. They're still coming to terms with, you know, how they're feeling about themselves. And pretty soon they'll catch up and everything's fine, and we sit down and we have something to eat.
And I can say it for myself, like, I can definitely be that guy in the group. The one thing that I've tried to do, I'm in my middle age, is like, I really be aware of, am I dragging the group down? Because I don't want to be that guy. Like, I'm playing, you know, this is very inconsequential golf. I care about it. And so, like, I'm okay if I'm hard on myself or I'm kind of like, you know, having a tough day. But if it suddenly becomes something where I'm bringing the group down, then I feel like, okay, you know, you shouldn't be kind of projecting your, you know, whatever it is you're dealing with on everyone else.
We're going to switch our focus. I'm talking with Sam Weinman, Golf Digest Digital Editorial Director. And it's like, oops, they've done it again. You know, the PGA Tour, the Players Championship, it blows my mind that they can't get this together. And some of the guys, I'd honestly be prouder of winning the Players over the PGA if I get to choose. This is something that you've been writing about. What is going on with the PGA Tour and the Players?
I mean, if the question is, like, why can't the PGA Tour sort of be at peace with what the Players is that kind of what you're asking?
Yeah, like, I'm kind of wondering, is the Players Championship the fifth major?
Sure, it's the fifth major, but there happens to be four majors. That's the best way I can phrase it. Like, I think it is a very important tournament. I think it's an incredible feel. It's a very compelling tournament. But you know, golf currently has four majors, and, you know, you win a major championship, that is different than winning a Players Championship. And so I think, you know, there is no shame and there's great honor in, you know, just really embracing the fact that this is the biggest tournament in golf that is not a major championship. And I think that's a fine position. And I think, you know, again, I can't get inside the heads of PGA Tour marketing folks or whatever, but I would say the more time you spend trying to argue that Players is the fifth major, the more you're kind of undermining what it already is, because you're saying, like, you know, it needs to be recognized in this way for it to suddenly have value. And so anyway, that's, you know, like, I get it. Like, you know, the PGA Tour runs 30 some odd events every year, but, you know, of those 30 some odd events, none of them are as big as the four major championships, which they don't own.
Right. Okay. And so, you know, I ask myself, and this is all from Golf Digest. Why do they, you know, kick up on the flagpole, March is going to be major?
Yeah.
It's like, yeah. Hello. And then let's see now. Michael Kim comes up with, I'd honestly be prouder of winning the Players over the PGA. Seriously?
Well, I mean, you know, I can't speak for Michael Kim.
Of course not.
There's definitely an argument to be made. The PGA, I'm pretty sure this is the PGA, the Players Championship field is stronger than the PGA field on the merits of the fact that there are not 20 club pros in the Players field. These are all, you know, the best players on the, you know, the best tour in the world. So that on its own would suggest that maybe that field's a little stronger, a little richer, although obviously, you know, with LIV, you don't have guys who are playing and live playing, so it's a little bit more nuanced. So, I mean, look, you know, you can carve out any position you want. Winning the Players is a big deal. It obviously comes with a lot of benefits, financial and otherwise.
Yep.
You know, I'm not here to tell you that it's more important than the Players or than the PGA or not. I am here to say that if you're using the designation of a major champion, the major championships do not include the Players Championship.
Right on. Yeah, I just find it interesting that they bring it out again. Why are you bringing up the Players Championship and the PGA Tour again? You know, saying March is going to be major, like implying that something is going to be happening. We don't need that. You know, it's like a waste of. Did I just waste a bunch of conversation?
Look, it's, you know, golf's weird, right? I mean, like I'm a huge hockey fan. Right. So the NHL, the biggest thing in the NHL, well, obviously Olympics are this week, but the NHL, the biggest thing in professional hockey most years is winning the Stanley Cup. No one questions that.
Nope.
Right. And there's the season builds towards this, you know, amazing climax, which is the Stanley Cup finals. And it's very clear, like, the NHL and professional hockey are one and the same. Golf's weird because the PGA Tour is this amazing, you know, series of tournaments that run every week. And all these amazing players, and yet the, you know, the quote unquote championship of golf is not run by the PGA Tour. So it's weird, like, you know, and it's always been weird. And no other sport. I mean, I guess tennis has a little bit of that too. But, you know, it's just such a weird dichotomy where you have these two things happening at once.
Yeah, and it doesn't help that the you know, one has a $4.5 million. Prize money payout, and then the other has a $3.42 million payout.
Yeah.
You know, it is so it's just different, as you said. You know, it just is. And then we're going to go to LIV. We're going to go to LIV now, 72 versus 54. Okay, they're all upset because they signed up for 54 holes, and now LIV wants them to play 72, but they're not getting any more money for it. What do you make of the LIV situation?
Oh, man, that's a more complicated one than the Players' Championship. I mean, look, you know, my interpretation of his LIV is kind of throwing everything that they can at a problem that they still haven't figured out, right? They're trying to establish its legitimacy as a worthy adversary or, you know, alternative to the PGA Tour, which, again, just to be clear, like, PGA Tour week in and week out is the very, you know, is the best tour in the world. And so, you know, LIV is trying to find a way to say, hey, listen, this is just as good or maybe even better for a variety of reasons than the PGA Tour. And you know, based on world ranking, you know, points being awarded, based on the perception that real golf is, you know, entails four rounds, they feel like they got to kind of do whatever they can to, you know, earn the sort of recognition that they feel like they deserve. You know, obviously they are on their heels right now based on the tour's willingness, PGA Tour's willingness to take guys back. Suddenly you're creating a situation where, you know, you have elite players who might have a little bit of buyer's remorse going to live and saying, oh man, I kind of feel like I've you know, become a little bit of my feeling is like I've become a little bit competitively irrelevant playing Liv. So I'd like to go back to the PGA Tour. So, you know, Liv is trying to find ways to say, no, you know, you can be competitively relevant playing on our tour. And look, you know, Bryson DeChambeau, Brooks Koepka won majors while playing for Liv. That's no small thing. Like, obviously, they're great players who play on that tour. It's just not as deep and not as rigorous as a regular PGA Tour event.
Exactly. And I've heard it said, I'd rather be playing, you know, where everything is at stake all the time on the PGA Tour than playing on Liv, because it's not as intense, and I want the intensity. Brooks Koepka, yeah. Patrick Reed, you know, they're in their final, is it the last year of their contract? I think it is. My notes don't tell me exactly. DeChambeau and John Rahm.
DeChambeau's in his last year. I think Rahm has another year. Reed and Brooks are done, so obviously that's why they left playing Liv.
Right.
Because their contracts were up. Look, one of the things that always attracted me to golf, what I thought was amazing, is, you know, obviously you have these great players who are winning tournaments, but once in a while, or more than once in a while, you'd have a kind of a journeyman player who would have the week of his life, and that included having to beat 155 other players over 4 days. And that's what made, you know, a regular PGA Tour event such a impressive thing to win. And so now, you know, if you're talking about playing 48 other players or 47 other players over 3 days, it's just not as difficult. It doesn't matter how good the golf is. You know, doing it over 4 days against more players is more difficult. So that's kind of always been my knock against Liv, is just having such great respect for how difficult it is to win, you know, professional golf tournaments. You can't say it was as difficult, or still is as difficult, because the fields are smaller than it, you know, given that it's just a smaller field and smaller challenge.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. Is there anything that you really wanted to bring up? I was looking at Ryo Hizatsune turning that water ball into a birdie. That was fantastic. He didn't expect to do that.
It's amazing. The guys have like their ability to have, you know, manufacture something out of nothing and just have short memories.
Yeah.
I mean, the only other thing I'll say, just because it's fresh on my mind, is I'm doing this series for Golf Digest called Golf Dads, which is like interviewing people about raising their kids in golf. And my first interview is with Ian Poulter. I did Johnson Wagner last week, it's running on Monday. And the Poulter one was great. And it's funny, what's called a mini stir online is I asked Poulter a question about raising your kids in golf and whether he believed or he agreed with a theory I had about whether like the best way to get your kid started is just teach them to hit the ball as hard as they can and then worry about where it goes. And I'm just looking at some of the kind of reaction to that. I'm not a teacher. I don't profess to know what is the best way. I was raising that question based on my experience, which as a person who started the game relatively late, I felt like I lost something in trying to like be so fixated on just, you know, my technique and my position as opposed to just swinging hard. And I've seen my boys are much better players than me because they started by just swinging like athletes and swinging naturally. And they've, you know, they've learned how to straighten it out from there. So it was an interesting point. Poulter agreed with me, but I feel like there's some people out there who are now saying it's not the right way to do it. It's a dumb take. Again, I'm not a teacher. Someone else smarter than me can probably answer that question. But I do feel like I've seen it firsthand that it's worked better for my boys than it worked for me. So,
where can we find more about that conversation about, you know?
Yeah. It's on golfdigest.com. It's on Golf Digest Instagram. That clip itself about Poulter responding to that question.
Okay.
You know, he was of the belief, you know, barring swinging too hard where you're getting injured, obviously he was like, you know, as long as the kids can do it safely, he's a fan of teaching them to hit the ball hard and then, you know, swinging fast and then kind of worrying more about technique and kind of, you know, being on plane and all that.
Yeah. Yeah. Great talking with you, Sam Weinman, Golf Digest Digital Editorial Director. It's a pleasure. Thank you for taking 20 minutes of your life to be with me this morning.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I really enjoyed it. Thank you.
Thank you. Aloha. We're going to come back. Adam Shupak, Senior Writer for Golf Week Magazine, author Dean Beeman, Golf's Driving Force. I bet you he's got another book. Maybe another book. You know, when these guys are writing, it just really, you need to read their work because they're awesome. We'll be back right after this. My name is Danielle Tucker. This is The Golf Club.
Stay tuned. We'll be hitting the greens with Danielle Tucker when we return to The Golf Club.
PGA Junior League is a fun team golf experience for kids that the entire family can enjoy.
Boys and girls learn the game from PGA and LPGA professionals and have a great time with friends.
Find your team and get ready for a fun and exciting PGA Junior League season.
And want to see you out playing in your jersey and having fun? Visit PGAJuniorLeague.com.
Your fingertips, Aloha Power Equipment.
Power outages can hit without warning. Keep the lights on with a Honda generator from Aloha Power Equipment. You'll never be left in the dark with Honda's lightweight, easy starting, super quiet generators. Put the power of a Honda generator to work for you.
We put power at your fingertips, Aloha Power Equipment.
What's a great way to shape up your golf? Polish your swing at the Newtown Golf Driving Range located in Iaia. Stop by to warm up before your round or wind down after work and hit a few balls. Enjoy great food from our popular Newtown Cafe and check out the Asau Golf Shop for the most up-to-date golf equipment and club repairs. The Newtown Driving Range, operated by the Casey Nakama Golf Group. Good golf, good food, and good fun.
Here's the local rule sign. Keep it in the fairway. It speeds up play. Now, back to Danielle Tucker.
Adam Shupak, he's been lugging his laptop and his golf bag and following the sun to write about golf since 1997. He's worked for the PGA Tour, World Golf Hall of Fame. He joined Golf Week in 2006, and he, of course, covers the PGA Tour. The business of golf and contributing to golf travel and architecture. When he gets a chance, he's always writing something about somebody or something. And I got to tell you, Adam Shupak, welcome into the clubhouse.
Thank you. Good to speak with you. It's been a while.
It has. And I was kind of going through stuff, you know, online, and I was... Travis Kelce will participate in the amateur portion of the AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am Thursday and Friday, in which begins all that gets together February 12th. The Kansas City Chiefs tight end played in the WM Phoenix Open Pro-Am alongside Scottie Scheffler and Brooks Koepka. Kelce's participation has led to speculation that Taylor Swift may also attend the event.
Well, the Swifties will be out in force if she's there. She seems to like Monterey and the aquarium, and so there's a lot of speculation there.
Yeah.
That's where, you know, but Travis Kelce's living, you know, he's no Super Bowl this year, but he's living his best life, playing Pro-Am. He's on the circuit.
He is on the circuit. And I just love the fact that, you know, hey, maybe Taylor Swift will be there, too. She's just got to stand there and look good, which she always does. It's just incredible, you know, how they get to run around the world. But, and speaking of incredible, the PGA of America announced on Wednesday its board of directors appointed Terry Clark. I can't keep up with who is in charge. You know, it's like another one bites the dust.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, all the leaders have been flipping that to the point that, you know, when Jay Monahan finishes his tenure with the PGA Tour at the end of the year, I think Mike Wan's going to be the longest tenured person at the USGA among the leaders of the quote-unquote five families of golf. And I think he just started in like 2020. So it's been hot potato with these jobs.
Yeah, and I don't quite get it, because it's like, isn't that a coveted position that you want to hold on for dear life?
Yeah, they've kind of, at the PGA of America, it's kind of been 6 years, and then they brought in Derek Sprague, who was a PGA Class A pro. That was kind of the mandate they wanted, instead of, you know, more of a business or marketing person or somebody who understood the tournament side of things. They wanted someone who had, you know, was one of them. And you know, Derek was there for a year and nearly a year. And, you know, he announced early this year that because of some family issues that he was going to spend some more time at home with his family. I think he has some aging, both his parents and his wife's parents that he needed to deal with. And so he stepped down and, you know, that they didn't take too long to find someone, but the new person had served as a member of the board as an independent director. He comes from United Healthcare and Optum, more of a CMO role. So I think he's got the business background and he already knows a lot about the PGA from being on the board. So he should be able to get up and running pretty quickly. And, you know, the PGA's got a lot of work to do. They've had a lot of turnover in their staff. They had some issues with how things were run with the Ryder Cup. And it's a big job. So he's got his hands full.
That's Terry Clark. So he's the guy you're talking about?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So he's in. Yeah, you know, to me, it's like, wait a second, you guys, don't you know that it's really important that you stay and be the leader?
But yeah, they need some continuity, yeah, for sure.
That's what I'm looking for, so that we can all, you know, kind of know that everything is in good hands and we'll just keep on trucking. Patrick Reed, you know, I find him the most interesting of the characters on the PGA tour, because I don't know, he doesn't seem to care what kind of impression he makes on people, but at the same time he does seem to care about the impression he makes on people. But he's declared for professional golf's version of the portal. What does this mean?
Yeah. well I didn't realize it, but he was basically a free agent and contract was up with Liv and he was negotiating. He didn't really, it came out in the press conference in Dubai after he won the tournament. And one of the British writers just said to him, you know, you mentioned that you're supposed to be in Riyadh. Was an interesting choice of words, supposed to be. Are you going to be in Riyadh for the first Liv event? And he said, well, this is the first time he had said that. He had earlier in the week or maybe even the previous week said, that the PGA Tour is the best tour in the world, and if he could play there, he would. But, you know, the special offer that the PGA extended to Brooks Koepka and a few others was not extended to him.
Oh, my.
But, yeah, because he won the Masters in 2018, and the PGA Tour was only allowing major winners since 2022 to come back. At the supposedly one-time offer that Brooks Koepka took advantage of, but Bryson DeChambeau, Cam Smith, and John Rahm decided not to. They had the February 1st, and they didn't opt in. So the other three are playing Liv, and are going to remain on Liv at least for another year.
Huh. Now,
but Patrick Reed,
yes,
on the other hand, you know, he's won a DP World Tour event already. He won in Dubai. Finished second last week, and I believe he was leading.
Yes.
He might win again, and so he could clinch a card to come back to the PGA Tour for next season through the DP World Tour, has the top 10 on their order of merit earn a card at the end of the year. So he could be back before we know it for next year. He's going to have to wait. But things could change. The PGA Tour seems to change things all the time. I'm not sure they're as anxious to have Patrick Reed come back, who wasn't as kind on the way out the way, Brooks Koepka was always, you knew he took the money and he was just kind of playing Liv because he took the money.
He took the money.
Patrick Reed, you know. But we need a villain, and he fills that role quite well.
he seems to satisfy everybody's need for that. It's all strange. There used to be some order, some discipline within the tours, you know, and then along comes Liv, Nothing wrong with Liv. I'm just saying that it kind of shook everything all up. This guy's going here, there, and everywhere. And, you know, you didn't sign up. You 54 holes. Now you want us to play 72. Liv is pulling a fast one here, right? We're not paying you any more money than we did when we paid you 54 holes. But this, I find this all fascinating in a very strange way. Like, I wish they'd get back to just playing and not playing each other on. You know, this is crazy.
Yeah, it's strange times. It doesn't seem like they're ever going to make a deal to work together the way they when they came up with the framework agreement. And it seemed like about a year ago, it seemed really close that Donald Trump was getting involved and everybody was, you know, they were going to have a deal. And that all fell apart, and they're probably as far away as they've ever been. And so, you know, it's the PGA Tour seems to be doing okay on its own, and they've got they're flush with cash from making a relationship with private equity. They haven't really spent much of that money, but so far they've you know, Brian Roloff's trying to figure out what to do. He's new in the job as the CEO. They're going to change the schedule a bunch, and the PGA Tour has been kind of become morphing into more like Liv, and Liv's kind of morphing into more like the PGA Tour, and they're probably going to meet in the middle at some point.
Isn't that just lovely? Meanwhile, billions of dollars are being exchanged. But then, see, that when all of that is going on, there is the light at times that shines. Like Ryo Hisatsune, Japan's Ryo Hisatsune. I want to say that name over and over and over again. He stole the show. Four birdies, an eagle in his final six holes, taking the outright lead away from Hideki Matsuyama. You know, wait a second, hold on. He's, you know, he went out early. He had a 7-under 64. For goodness gracious, these guys are really playing hard. So that's going to be interesting. It's Saturday and it's going to be played, and I'm not sure what time zone they're in. I don't want to talk about it because it could be ruining the day for someone, you know. And then we've got Scottie Scheffler. It seems like 5 days ago somebody was saying he was having the worst day. He looked like an amateur golfer. And the next thing you know, he is bouncing back. It's 2-over 73, and then he shoots a 6-under 65. Whoop. Wow. So what's going on with Scotty?
Yeah, that was a surprise to see him have such a struggle there. That's where he won his very first PGA Tour event. He's won there twice and has a terrific record. And, you know, having seen him already dominate in Palm Springs, it would have thought he would be right in it. But, you know, maybe he's just giving everybody a little bit more of a chance. And I wouldn't be surprised if he doesn't go low today and sneak into the conversation and just be lurking heading into the final round. And, you know,
sneak into the conversation.
72 holes is the best. Is the right, you know, number of holes for a competition, because the cream will rise to the top eventually. And, you know, he had an off day. He figured a few things out, apparently. And, I feel like this one he's down a lot, but, you know, he's got 36 holes to go, and it'll really depend on what some of the front runners are able to do. I think somebody in the, you know, near the top of the leaderboard could shoot another 64 or 65 today, and it'll be tough for Scotty to gain too much ground. But, you know, if somebody doesn't, and he shot 62 on a Saturday there before, you know, it's just a fun event out there with all the fans and the craziness and the partying going on. It's a real one-off for the PGA Tour. There's nothing else like it, but always enjoy the madness, and especially if there's a hole in one out at 16, there's nothing quite like that.
That we're talking about the WM Phoenix Open. That's where everybody, you know, has a backpack full of stuff that they're drinking, and they have a really good, rousing good time out there. Do the players ever get disturbed by the rousing good time the people who are watching are having?
I think they can. It, you know, so, I've heard a lot of them say that, you know, when there's so much noise, you almost don't hear it. It's sometimes more difficult when it's quiet and then one person shouts something out.
Gosh.
But if you don't, if it's so loud, you don't actually, you can kind of drown it out. And, you know, if you don't like it, you probably shouldn't be playing in that event. You take that one off and pick another tournament to go to, because it's, but a lot of guys do enjoy it. And you know, it feels like they're really professional athletes playing in a Coliseum when they get to that 16th hole. And that's pretty unique and cool. And so a lot of guys, I think, do really get the heart racing a little bit and the adrenaline pumping, and they can have some fun out there.
Yeah, and it's hot. So people tend to drink when it's really hot, right? So what does hot weather do to golf balls? Do they go farther, or do you know?
Well, yes, they do. And it's also, you know, being played in a mountainous area, so the ball does go a little farther in the desert out there in Phoenix, Scottsdale. So, yeah, you got to factor that in a little bit as well.
And people were talking about humidity contributes to increased ball flight. It doesn't make sense to me, because humidity seems like it's making things harder to push through, but I guess not. Don't know.
We'll get Bryson DeChambeau on to explain all this to us.
Bryson, where are you when we need you? And then the golfers, here's a statement. Golfers should prioritize hydration and sun protection in the hot weather just to maintain their performance and their health. And electrolyte drinks and sun protective clothing are recommended for hot weather golfing. End of story. Just pay attention to that. Keep yourself hydrated. Keep your skin healthy, and you'll get along just fine for the rest of your life on the golf course. It's fabulous. Now, what are you working on? Because I know you're always writing books. You're amazing.
You know, I got a little nearly five-year-old daughter, and so the book, I've been working on a book for a long time, but it's kind of on the back burner. I don't expect it to come out anytime soon. I'm just trying to, you know, I got enough stories I can't even get to, and I just finished a couple fun ones that are going to be in Lynx magazine, one being on a profile of Scott Van Pelt of ESPN and his love of the Masters for the Lynx spring issue. But for Golf Week this week, I had a really interesting piece on Ryan Moore, two pieces actually, and they both seem to be pretty popular with readers. One about the shoe company he has, True Lynxwear, and the other about how he hardly played at all last year, and he really didn't miss it, but he also had a bunch of complaints about how the PGA Tour kind of isn't what it used to be and doesn't look after its veterans and their fringe players the way it used to. So it was a pretty interesting piece, and got a lot of feedback on that one.
Oh, nice. What the people, did you quote anyone? Did they give you a quote on how the PGA Tour?
Yeah, Ryan had lots of good spicy quotes, as I would put it.
yeah, spicy. Where are we going to read it? Where are we going to read it?
That's on golfweek.com.
Golfweek.
All those other stories, golfweek.com.
Okay. Great.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's important for us to stay tuned, because, you know, it used to be so staid. You know, there was the PGA Tour, you know, and the PGA Tour always did things properly. And the PGA Tour says, and therefore we listen. But now I just can't keep up with, you know, well, the LIV Golf and the this and that and this. It's just very different. Do you find it unsettling?
I think unsettling is a good word, but it is just a sign of the times. I think the tour has been, I think the tour probably wanted to do some of these things for a long time, but didn't feel like they had the power to do so, because it is a player run tour, and I'm not sure how the players would have responded, but they were forced into this, you know, existential dilemma of LIV coming after their best players. And so they've been very reactionary for the last few years. Everything that they've done just seems like they're throwing stuff, you know, against the wall to see what's going to work and what might help and what will keep the top 20, 30 players are have a lot of leverage right now, and guys like Ryan Moore are saying, you know, what about us?
I got it.
We're getting screwed here.
Yeah, yeah, and they are, because they're not, you know, top-tier names, you know, recognized billboard names. And that's a shame. I don't know, maybe behind the scenes it did happen 20 years ago. But it just seems like it was more patriarchal, you know, where the guys in the top room were taking care of the kids that are making money for them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In Ryan's instance, he kept his card for 20 straight years. He finished 151st, so fell out of the top 125, and then that conditional status. So all he had was being a past champion, having won 5 times on tour. And he said he only got into 4 events last year. And in the past, he thought he would have got, usually with that status, probably be able to play about 12 times. And if you play 12 times, you have a chance to get your card back. But if you're only playing 4 times,
uh-uh.
Unless you win,
uh-huh.
It's pretty hard. It's pretty hard to make a living out there. And his point was like, I don't want to go down to the Corn Ferry and lose money playing for significantly less and against these 20-somethings that are bombing it past me. And so he's kind of stuck in limbo. He's at 42, 43 years old.
Oh, yeah.
And waiting till 50. And his point was, he argues that the Champions Tour should come down to 45 because they got all these guys that he said, you know, they're going to play more. Most of the guys are now going to be kind of 25 to 35 will be the sweet spot. Are you going to wait 15 years to be able to be eligible for the Champions Tour? Well, what are you doing in those 15 years?
I
thought he brought up some good points that they're topics that need to be examined. And I thought it was interesting that he was raising some stuff that, you know, we're not really talking about. We're focused so much on, how many signature events there are and $20 million purses. And he was saying, let's take some of that $20 million and put some of that towards the development tour to breed the new young players and have them to at least be able to have something to fall back on if you do drop down. And I thought there was a lot of people felt like he was complaining, you know, the typical lineup, go play better. But, and there's some truth to that. But also at the same time, it's become harder and harder to keep your card. And when you do lose it, the options, the path back is not as, there's still a way back, but it's tougher than in the past.
Yeah.
And that was his point.
Well, and he's right. Now, on a completely different, she's 5 years old. Have you started playing golf with her?
Not too much really yet. She's starting to develop some interest in sports. We did gymnastics this morning, uh-huh. And she's interested in skating and really good on the bicycle.
Wow.
I gotta tell you.
Wow.
Yeah,
cool.
No, I gotta pedal hard to keep up with her.
She's off and running. Dad, you better catch her now. That's wonderful. That's wonderful. I mean, girls love their daddies, and they get so much from their father when it comes to self-confidence. And that's the most important thing. You build that self-confidence inside them so they feel like, you know, they're not alone when they're finally in college or wherever they're going, yeah? Dad's always with them. Thank you, Adam. Is there something you wanted to bring up that I didn't give you a chance to talk about?
No, I think they did great. Heading to the West Coast, looking forward to Pebble and Riviera the next couple weeks. Always two of my favorite stops, and great fields for those both being signature events. So I think things are starting to heat up and get exciting. And, you know, March in Florida, and then the Masters isn't that far away.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, you'll have to be on soon. Thank you so much for being inside the clubhouse with us.
All right, Danielle. Aloha.
Aloha. We're coming back right after this. My name is Danielle Tucker. E. Mike Johnson, Golf Digest Magazine Equipment Editor. Yes, we're going to find out something about some interesting changes and things that are being done right after this. My name is Danielle Tucker. This is the Golf Club.
Stay tuned. We'll be hitting the greens with Danielle Tucker when we return to the Golf Club.
When Sears opened here more than 60 years ago, who made all their signs? The Honolulu Sign Company, to 1724 Hart Street off Waikamila Road on the Everside. They do building marquees, letter signs and lighted signs, parking and tow signs of every kind, OSHA compliant signs, custom signs of all types. Call 847-4047. Licensed and insured Honolulu Sign, serving Hawaii since 1939, where quality and service have not been forgotten. Call 847-4047 now.
Poipu Bay on Kauai, South Shore. Share our home with need a gift for that special someone? Tired of giving fruit baskets you know are getting recycled? Give a Poipu Bay Golf gift certificate. Whether it's a birthday, business, or anniversary, here's the one gift that is always the right size and the perfect date. Just give us a call and it will be waiting for you to pick up or mail to your office. There may even be time to sneak in a nine. Call us for the perfect gift, where great golf is played every day at Poipu Bay on the Garden Isle.
What does your company sell? Do you provide a service, fill a need, sell insurance or real estate, or that must-have new car? Become a sponsor of Danielle Tucker's The Golf Club radio show. We reach a pure target audience of business owners. Let us help you. We have affordable rates and it's easy to do. Just email rick@radiogolfclub.com or call Rick at 808-220-1000. Reach the people like you who are too busy running their business. That's Rick at RadioGolfClub.com or call 808-220-1000.
Hey, Mark Rolfing here. The First Tee Hawaii is a nonprofit organization that helps kids build character, confidence, and life skills through golf. And we need volunteers like you to coach our next generation of golfers. No matter your skill level, our free coach training gives you tools to mentor kids. We have locations on all the islands, and enrollment is open now for our Level 1 Coach Certification. Call 808-500-1515.
I got to bring up Ryo Hisatsune one more time because he turned a water ball into a birdie and just juiced up those crowds at the Phoenix Open. He chipped in for that birdie after driving his ball in the water on the par 4 17th. Shot a bogey-free 8 under 63 on Friday, surging into the lead in that second round. And he said through an interpreter, "It was very lucky." I want you all to remember that, okay? "It was very lucky. A nice tee shot. But I kind of pulled it a little into the water. Some more reset and make it so going to be more fun." I want you to focus on what he said when you're on the golf course today.
Off a tree, hit a rock, and bounce next to the pin. That's my kind of golf. Now back to Danielle Tucker on the Golf Club.
Mike Johnson, E. Mike Johnson, Golf Digest magazine equipment editor, covering a range of topics within the sports realm, individual sports, competitive sports, sports tournaments, and of course, his passion for golf always coming to the forefront. And he's a judge for the magazine's Hot List, you know, Golf Digest's Hot List. He's been featured in Golf Digest, Yahoo Sports, News International, one of the judges for the magazine's Hot List team, and five-time club champion. Yeah. Or is that, let me get this straight. I could be misreading this. Maybe, welcome into the clubhouse, Mike Johnson.
That would be five-time runner-up, okay. So I feel the pain and suffering of everybody out there.
Yeah, it just is what it is, right? You know?
Hey, I was never the best player. three of those times I was playing college golfers, and I'm just an old man out there hitting shots.
You know, but us old people sometimes make really good shots.
Yeah. I'm actually jealous of Hisatsune, because the last time I played TPC Scottsdale, I drove it in the water there and made double.
Oh, didn't he? I mean, but his attitude, it was very lucky. A nice tee shot, but I kind of pulled it a little bit into the water. some more reset and make it so going to be more fun. You
know, I was like, yeah. No, I think that's a key for everyone in golf, is that the next shot is always an opportunity, and you have to look at it like that and, you know, put away the previous shot, whether it's good or bad. You know, you stiff one to 3 feet, you can get so excited that you did that that you forget to focus on the putt. So every shot's an opportunity.
Amen. And we mustn't forget it. There was also Scottie Scheffler. Do you remember in the last week or so why he was called like an average kind of player? He was looking very not Scottie Scheffler like, and then all of a sudden he comes on strong, and you know, he's scaring everybody again.
Yeah, I mean, that's our culture, right? We react to the latest news, and the recency bias is unbelievably strong. But I think anyone who's knowledgeable about the game of golf just realize that's golf.
Yeah.
You know, you're going to have days or weeks where you're just not on for whatever reason. But a player of Scheffler's caliber is always going to dig himself out of that. And, you know, I think it shows a lot about his mental fortitude that after a rough first round, he didn't just say, well, this is one of those weeks. He's, you know, he went right back out there day two and fired a good round, and you know, it'd be interesting to see what he does today.
Yes, yes, and in one of the comments that I just happened to lift, after working on his grip, Scheffler shot 2 under 33 on the front nine to move close to the cut line, and left no doubt with 4 birdies on the back to extend his streak to 66 cuts made. Longest active on the PGA Tour. Awesome. But what do you think, after working on his grip, what would he do to be working on his grip?
Well, sometimes, you know, the club just doesn't feel right in your hands. I think we've all had that feeling, whether it's been on a tee shot or iron shot or standing over a putt. You know, you're like, this just doesn't feel right. And you go ahead and swing anyway, and then you say, why did I do that?
Yes.
I don't think it was anything significant with his grip. It was probably just off. You know, when you're talking about players of his caliber, a millimeter or two off can be felt. You know, we can't feel that, but they certainly can. And, you know, you just go back to your basics. And his performance is, you know, he gets compared a little bit to Tiger. I think that's still fool's gold.
Yeah.
You know, Tiger is Tiger, but He displays the same mentality with his cut streak, which is, I'm going to go out there and give it my best at all times.
Yeah.
And I think that, more than anything else, is what should, you know, strike fear in the heart of everyone else on tour, that he just doesn't let up.
No. Head down, going ahead. I was thinking about the heat in Arizona, if that would somehow impact the tape on the grip, you know, so it's
unlikely. I mean, they're used to playing in heat all the time.
Right. Yeah.
You know, if you're a professional golfer, especially one of his caliber, you have to be prepared to play in anything. And they are. So I wouldn't put a lot into that, I don't think.
Excellent. Well, so speaking of, you know, grips and the everything that goes into actually being able to stand in front of a golf ball and hit it. Titleist, speaking of golf balls, has 2 new golf balls. And I'm not sure it's the not pro V1 category, completely redesigned tour soft and high speed velocity. Can you give us some insight into this one?
Yeah, I mean, these are 2 very different golf balls, but serve very specific audiences. I mean, you know, you're looking at the Pro V1, Pro V1X level. You know, those are $58 a dozen, and there are a lot of golfers that just don't want to spend that. And the Tour Soft is a performance golf ball. You know, you probably lose a little bit around the green with it, but if you make your cost-benefit analysis, and say that's worth it to only pay $40 a dozen. Tour Soft is actually a ball that, you know, you can really get around the golf course with in a good manner. I mean, it's got a relatively soft cover. It feels good, behaves well off the tee. Is it a Pro V1 or Pro V1X? No, it's not. Those balls are designed specifically to deliver superior performance around the greens. But, you know, a lot of us can't tell the difference, and so that's a good ball for a lot of folks. The velocity is a pure distance play. If you think of it like a pinnacle or a top flight on steroids.
Okay.
It's built for people who put a premium on distance. It's a two-piece ball, has a very firm cover. They've made a lot of improvements since the early iterations of it to try to mitigate some of that firm feel and deliver at least a sliver of greenside performance. But if you're looking to just bash the ball as far as possible and pay, you know, I think it's $28 a dozen, that's your ball.
KORL, Waianae, Honolulu. So does the white, green, or orange that they offer the velocity in, does that make a difference to the ball, or is it just a matter of this is what I want to look at?
Just what you want to look at. I mean, everyone is – personalization is everywhere in society, and especially consumer goods. And the more reasons you can give people to say yes, the better off you are. There are a lot of companies that offer a lot of models of golf balls in varying colors and patterns and side stamps and alignment aids. And, you know, Titleist resisted that for a while, but in the last half decade has really gotten on board in a big way. And I think it helps them, you know, get people into their brand that maybe weren't in their brand previously.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like putting out all the fresh fruit. So it has all these different colors, and whichever color grabs your eye and you like the best, that's the one to go for. I was kind of this kind of a lost your mind, have you lost your mind question. Ben Griffin, he switched to the Max Fly Tour, is that the Tour 10 golf ball 2 years ago, even though the
Tour
brand?
X, the Max Fly Tour X.
Okay, and he hasn't, or the brand hasn't won in 20 years. Why would he do that?
Yeah, it's interesting you ask that question because I've spoken with Ben. I actually spoke with him on Monday about his latest ball, which is the Max Fly Tour XLF.
Okay.
Which is a ball that's not yet out, but it is on the conforming list, and he is looking for a little less spin. But, you know, we've talked in the past about why did you go to Maxfly? And, you know, he said a lot of his fellow tour players were like, man, what are you doing? Why are you risking your career on this? But he had his caddy was friends with Michael Thompson, who's Lexi Thompson's brother. Lexi plays Maxfly. Ben became intrigued with the product, tried it out, did his due diligence, and he was like, this ball is every bit as good as what I'm playing, but it's a tad longer. And you can't argue with the results. You know, he went from 60-some-odd on the FedEx Cup to in the top 10. He's number 8 in the world ranking. He's won 3 times. He's a Ryder Cup pick. And, you know, I asked him, I go, has the script kind of flipped now where instead of players questioning your decision, they're coming up to you and saying, hey, what's the deal with this ball? and he said, absolutely. Fine. So he just signed a 3-year extension of his deal with Maxfly. So he truly believes in the product. It comes through when you talk to him. And it's actually fun to see. You know, Maxfly hasn't won on tour since 2003 when Fred Funk won the Sanderson Farms. So, you know, it's a brand that I grew up with as being a high-quality brand, and it's kind of nice to see it back in the news a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. I think we a lot of us can remember that. Maxfly, you know. And it's interesting when I was reading some of the different stories about how families within the golf community, Alex Ritemel, is that his caddy's name?
Yeah.
had a relationship with Lexi Thompson's family. Lexi yeah. uses Max Fly.
it's crazy.
Yeah. So it's all, you know, and he used to caddy for Curtis Thompson. Rit Hamel reached out to them, and the information and feedback piqued Griffin's interest. It's just like there's so many stories in this world of golf, because people, well, golfers tend to get together with golfers, and particularly if you're at the level of Lexi Thompson, or, you know, I don't know Mr. Rit Hamel that well, but it's just great to see. Yeah.
It is, and for those watching the Waste Management this weekend, they're going to see a name, Pearson Cootie, on the board, and he is the grandson of 1971 Masters champ Charles Cootie.
Oh, so they're coming up. Yeah.
Keeping it in the family.
Do you have any kids in the family that you're teaching or that want to get into the game?
Yeah, my son Sean is really into it. I mean, one of the great joys I have is we play probably twice a week together in the summer. And he has more holes in one at my home course than I do.
So wow.
He's kind of torquing me off that way.
That's their job.
But no, it's really fun to watch. And, you know, it's one of those things. And I didn't put any pressure on him. And one day, 15 or so years ago, he's like, hey, I want to go play golf. I'm like, let's go.
Nice.
And, you know, we just made it fun. And I think one of the best things you can do for youngsters or spouses or friends who want to get into the game is just make sure that initial experience is fun.
Yes.
You know, for me, the first hole, my club has a crest about 200 yards out, then a big downhill. I brought him right to the crest, so if he made contact at all, the ball would roll out 60, 70 yards. And, you know, after like three or four holes, the frustration was starting to get, and I'm like, okay, we're done.
Yes.
Let's go grab a drink.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, to be cognizant of that it's a hard game, and when it ceases being fun as they're getting started, just stop and go do something else that's fun.
Exactly. You just want to, you know, you've had enough. It's starting to twist your brain, and it's time to roll along. And that's...
And I get it. It's hard. If you've paid for nine holes and you've only played five, you feel like you're leaving something on the table. But if the experience is good, the experience is good, and it doesn't matter.
Now, we've got this TaylorMade Spider Tour GD Hot List Score 5-star ranking. All right, it's pricey, $350. Tell us about this.
Well, the Spider Tour has been around for a long time, at least the genesis of it. But they've added a zero-torque model to it, and zero-torque putters are all the rage. But when I think it's, you know, Brooks Koepka just went to a Spider Tour away from his longtime Scotty Cameron Blade.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that's probably the biggest story of all, which is the Blade putter, at least for the masses, and even on tour, is, you know, starting to be put on the endangered species list. There's just no reason from a physics standpoint why a mallet isn't really better than a blade. Now, if you can't stand the look of a mallet, I get it. That's fine. But something like the Spider Tour has stability. It has a bunch of alignment features. It has a great insert, you know, designed to impart a forward roll on the ball. There's not a lot not to like about it. And our 32 testers at the Hot List, you know, continue to fall in love with a putter like that.
Mm-hmm. You know, I was looking at all the reasons why, you know, thermoplastic rubber position behind the face used by TaylorMade's in irons, minimizing the vibration for the cleaner, crisper sound. Sound is so important. People don't realize isn't it?
Sound and look and feel, you know, a lot of people talk to us, and we've probably spoken about this in the past. Why don't you just do robot testing for your club reviews? And my answer has been the same for a decade. Robots don't buy golf clubs. Humans buy golf clubs. And things like the look, the feel, and especially the sound can be an instant turnoff or an instant appeal.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, square drivers were technically a real achievement, but the sound on the early ones was so bad, it killed the category before it even had a chance to get off.
Dang!
Yeah.
Yeah, it was pretty awful. And then you heard
used to say, if you want to call your kids for dinner, just hit a shot with the Nike square driver.
Oh, I shouldn't be laughing.
It's okay. We learn from our mistakes.
Yeah. TaylorMade, is it still for sale by its Korean owner? I don't know if I missed an issue, $3.5 billion.
Yeah, as far as I'm aware, I haven't been following it real close the last couple months, but I believe it's still for sale. But it's, you know, like most things, it's messy and takes a while to get through all the machinations of it. But, you know, anytime you're owned by an investor group, they're going to look to get out at some point and get their money back.
And get their money back.
Unless it's a strategic partnership, you know, like a golf company buying another golf company. You know, if you're looking at private equity buying something, they're buying it with the intention of turning it over in 3 to 5 years. And that's what's happened here. I mean, TaylorMade's in a good spot. You know, they've enjoyed the golf boom. And I think the investors are probably at a point where they're like, yeah, now's the time to sell and make our profit on it.
Mm-hmm.
I think people mistake at times things being for sale as a sign for something's wrong. Quite often it's actually the opposite. There's an appeal to it, and there's an audience for it, and they're willing to pay for it.
And there's one final question I have to ask you about the ball rollback. About a year ago, maybe longer, USGA, R&A formally announced their intention to roll back the distance golf balls can travel. It would have gone into effect in 2028 in January. Is that still happening?
No. So it was going to be January 2028 for quote-unquote elite play, which was never quite defined.
Okay.
And then 2030 for the rest of us. Recently, the USGA got feedback, and now it's looking more like it's going to be 2030 for everybody, which is better, I think. It eliminates some chaos. But the wild card in this is the PGA Tour, remains to be. They have yet to take a stand one way or another as to whether they're going to go ahead and use it or go against it. Brian Rolapp, the new head, you know, coming over from the NFL, is well aware of entertainment value and distance sells.
Uh-huh.
So I think there's still some negotiating to be done. And at best, it goes into effect at 2030, but there may be more to come on that front as well.
And we'll just follow along.
nothing else. It gives the manufacturers another 2 years to really figure out the best way to make a reduced
light
ball.
I love the optimism. That's perfect. That's exactly what it's, yeah. E. Mike Johnson, Golf Digest Magazine, equipment editor at Golf Digest. Thank you so much for being inside the clubhouse. Learned so much from you. Very grateful. Thank you.
Great to be with you, Danielle.
Aloha. We're going to come back. Ben Hongo, PGA President, Aloha Section PGA, member of the PGA of America, of course, the largest sports organization composed of PGA of America golf professionals who work daily to grow interest and participation in the game of golf. After this, my name is Danielle Tucker. This is The Golf Club.
Stay tuned. We'll be hitting the greens with Danielle Tucker when we return to the Golf Club.
I'm Paul Morikawa, 2020 PGA Champion. In every golf journey, some goals can feel like an uphill climb, even intimidating, especially if you're on your own. But in the game of golf, helping hands are all around us. Whether you dream of a championship or you're just trying to make golf your thing, PGA coaches have industry-leading knowledge, guidance, and support to help you take the next step. Just like my PGA coach, Rick Sessinghaus, has always done for me. Wherever your golf journey is headed, a PGA coach can get you there. Find your PGA coach at pga.com/coach.
Your fingertips, Aloha Power Equipment.
Power outages can hit without warning. Keep the lights on with a Honda generator from Aloha Power Equipment. You'll never be left in the dark with Honda's lightweight, easy starting, super quiet generators. Put the power of a Honda generator to work for you.
We put power at your fingertips, Aloha Power Equipment.
What's a great way to shape up your golf? Polish your swing at the Newtown Golf Driving Range, located in Iaea. Stop by to warm up before your round, or wind down after work and hit a few balls. Enjoy great food from our popular Newtown Cafe, and check out the Asau Golf Shop for the most up-to-date golf equipment and club repairs. The Newtown Driving Range, operated by the Casey Nakama Golf Group. Good golf, good food, and good fun. If you want more consistency and more distance in your golf swing, schedule a session with Coach Claude Brousseau, PGA Master and Director of Player Development at the Wailea Golf Academy. He's ranked number one teacher in Hawaii by Golf Digest since 2019 and three-time PGA Teacher of the Year. Claude will simplify your game and make you better. Scratch golfer or just beginning, call Claude at 808-856-9458 or by email claudeforbestgolf@gmail.com. That's 808-856-9458, and have more fun playing golf.
Man, I thought that was in the cup. It bounced out. I've been robbed. Now, back to the clubhouse with Danielle Tucker.
Yes, don't you just, you know... I've been robbed. Ben Hongo, PGA, president of the Aloha Section PGA, member of the PGA of America, the largest sports organization composed of PGA of America golf professionals. And they work daily, growing the interest and the participation in the game of golf. Director of instruction, Hongo Golf, hongogolf.com. Teaching professional based at the course Kapalua Golf Academy in Lahaina. Welcome into the clubhouse, Ben.
Good morning.
Good morning. And I was just going over this. I was so amazed at how well Ryo Hizatsune did with the water ball into a birdie. To the crowds that were in Phoenix Open, you know, having a beverageum or two probably lit them up. And then, of course, he managed to chip in for the birdie after driving the ball in the water. And then he said it was very lucky, a nice tee shot, but kind of pulled it a little bit into the water. Some more reset and make it so going to be more fun. I like the guy's attitude.
I do too. He was on fire yesterday. Both him and Matsuyama.
Yes, yes. It was so unusual to see two Japanese players at the top of the leaderboard. It was awesome, and I can't wait to see what's going to happen today. It's going to be fun.
Yep, I'm looking forward to it as well.
Now, when we come to take a lesson, or several. What do you suggest for people when they come to you and say, I'd like to come and have a lesson? Do you say, well, one lesson's not real? You know, what do you suggest?
You know, I have a real deep conversation with my, you know, whoever a client's going to be. And, and we try to set a true goal and kind of go from there. And it's different from person to person for sure. And if you're just trying to, you know, have fun on the golf course, not embarrass yourself. A little different than say, a junior in high school wanting to play golf Division I. So, I mean, those are very extremes, but, I think everybody has their wants and needs and, you know, what they want out of the game. And, if you can improve a little bit better, whether you're trying to break 100 or break a 90 or break, you know, break, you know, 70, I think, you know, you have to kind of follow the path. And, you know, it's also, you know, what you're willing to put into the game of golf as well. So, you know, do you have time to really practice and put your time into it? So I think having a realistic expectations are really important as well.
Particularly after you've bought a set of golf clubs, you know? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think, and I think a lot of people, you know, shy away from, and certainly, I mean, if you've never played golf before, I don't want you to go out and spend, you know, $3,000-$4,000 on brand new golf clubs. But I think kind of, you know, going through the fitting process, I mean, that's another conversation that, you know, that I would have with my students.
Of course.
You know, that you're just going to get a, you know, a box set, you know, from you know, Dick's Sports, Sporting Goods, or are you going to go, you know, to some of the experts, you know, when it comes to fitting?
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. That is so important. Somebody wrote, it's, you know, if you're going to play a game of golf and you've got your golf clubs, go get fit before you play.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, you know, I'm like an example, right? Because I'm 5'5", so a regular golf clubs off the shelf, it really doesn't fit me. It's kind of a bummer when I just go play one round, you know, like on the mainland, having the need to take my golf clubs instead of using rentals. But you know, for me, you know, if you're 5'5", short, vertically challenged, I call it, or if you're 6'5", on the other side, I mean, I think it's important to get golf clubs fitted.
Yeah. So now what if I've got this set of golf clubs, they've been in my closet for goodness knows how long, but all of a sudden my friends want me to go play and I'd kind of like to get back out there too. But they don't seem to be working anymore. I was noticing that you have a swing diagnostic testing place within your, what would you do?
Well, I think, you know, a lot of instructors now use some type of a technology. I use launch monitor called Full Swing Kit. And, you know, it gives me a parameter, you know, ball speed, club speed, so on and so on, to give me a good idea, you know, what's really going on with, you know, the performance of the golf club and if it's really good for you or not. So let's just say if I have somebody that's swinging a golf club, you know, with the driver, say 80 miles per hour, but they're using men's stiff golf clubs, I mean, it's probably not a good match.
Right.
So I think it's important to get some matrix, you know, there's so many things in golf now, it's measurable, you know, and ball flight and club performance. It's a pretty easy thing to figure out.
Okay. Excellent. And then I also, you know, there are people who... they want to go out and have more fun on the golf course, but they can only seem to hit the ball far, but they can't really play. The short game bedevils them. You know, what are your suggestions? Can they come to you for lessons, short game lessons?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think short game is, you know, it's the lowest, you know, hanging fruit of the game. And you can get, you know, you can get a lot of stuff down, you know, from a standpoint of, you know, scoring average and stuff like that. So, you know, a lot of people, you know, can move the ball, you know, say 350 yards, 400 yards in two shots, but it takes another five shots to get the ball in the hole.
Yeah. And
so it's funny that, you know, like a little 5-footer, you know, all these little putts or little, you know, chips right off the green, how people have really hard time with it. And I think a lot of people, you know, the attitude, especially with the short game, is they'll just kind of figure it out on their own, and they don't really seek professional help. So I think it's certainly, you know, I think it's for me, it's a big part of my teaching, especially when somebody gets on a program with me and they have a specific goals.
And specific goals, like prepping for a tournament that you want to play in, or making the high school golf team?
Yeah, absolutely. Or breaking 100.
Breaking 100 days.
And, yeah, so just really any kind of goals, because I think the shortest way to get the scoring down is in the short game, because there's, you know, so much of the game is played inside of, say, 50 yards of the green. You know, putting being almost 40% or more than 40%, and then chipping in, you know, little shots around the greens, you know, probably be another 20% or so. So I think it's important, yeah, for sure.
Do businessmen come to you like they've, you know, been invited to play a foursome, they're going to do something, and he hasn't played in a long time? Can you help?
Yeah, absolutely. I have a client right now, you know, and he's a surfer, and he got invited to play in a tournament last weekend on Kona Pali. And, you know, so we were pretty hard at it, you know, probably since about Christmas time. And he wanted to get prepped to play in this tournament. I mean, you know, yeah. I call it more of a golf outing because it was a scramble tournament and whatnot. But, he was playing with a professional surfer, and he wanted to make sure that he kind of contributed to the team. One, two, he didn't want to embarrass himself. And he said that he hit one of the best drives on the last hole. And, that one shot, a lot of times for a lot of people, you know, keeps them coming back to golf.
Exactly. And, when you hit it on the sweet spot, there is something that the sound, the feel in your hand, you just know you've made perfect contact. And sometimes you don't know how you did it. That's the hard part, man.
Consistency part is the hard part, right? And also, you know, you can do it maybe once or, you know, twice out of 10 times. It's like, how do we get that to, you know, 6 out of 10 times or 7 out of 10 times?
How do we get in touch with you?
You can call me, probably the best way is just visit my website, hongogolf.com. And my phone number is on there, my email, everything's there. So, yeah, absolutely.
Hongogolf.com. It's HONGO golf.com. And, take advantage of the time, an hour. What would you suggest? An hour a week and maybe then space that out a little bit more just to kind of get.
Yeah, I mean, we definitely do a little deep dive into the golf game and, we'll come up with some type of a plan for sure.
Excellent.
You know, whether it's once a week or once a month or whatever, you know, and I want to make sure that I fit into your budget as well.
Right on. That's wonderful. And where are you on Maui?
I'm in. I'm actually at Kona Pali and Kapalua now. So, so I'm on the west Maui.
So Kapalua and Kona Pali.
Correct.
Oh, wonderful. See, you can catch Ben Hongo. You'd got to. Okay, get over there, and it'll make having fun so much more fun.
Yeah, and, if you can't come to Maui, you know, there's 250 golf professionals in the state of Hawaii, and, you know, most of us are really, really good at what we do, so.
Yeah. Yeah, and they can help you with that confounding wind game, that darn wind.
Absolutely.
Your bunker play. How did I get in there anyway? And putting the close. You want to close, and I have to close the show. I am being so corny today. Thank you so much for being inside the clubhouse with us, Ben. You're always an insight.
Thank you for having me, and we'll talk to you soon.
Good. Aloha. And I want to thank all the people who make this show possible. And remember, there are tee times still available. If you haven't gone to play a round of golf, the Lost Boys at Makalei, you might want to go look for them. There's a 9:48 and an 11:10. Poipu, the weathermen, are on the course. And, you know, the weather is supposed to be kind of a little this and a little that. A lot of wind, a lot of rain, and we'll see how it goes. Turtle Bay, there's a 9:52 and an 11:30. The Beach Babes are there. Well, maybe they've moved down this trip. Bayview, Swamp. Oh, boy. The swamp rats are out. Bayview. There's 1156. I'm sure they're having fun. On the Emerald Course on Maui, there's a 120. At least there was. That was the only tee time when I started this morning at 6:30. So that's about it. I want to thank you for your mana, and may you hit the sweet spot every time. I'm Danielle Tucker. This is The Golf Club.
You've been listening to the award-winning Golf Club radio show with Danielle Tucker on the Golf Club Network statewide. Tune in next week, and we'll tee it up together only on The Golf Club.
Copyright 2026.